Welcome to Plastic Surgery Practice Magazine's podcast series on fillers and injectables, brought to you by Mentor, makers of Prevel, and the Multispecialty Foundation. I'm Jeffrey Frenson, editor of Plastic Surgery Practice Magazine. In part three of this four-part series, we examine off-label uses of fillers and injectable products. Off-label means that physicians will use fillers and injectables in ways that are not explicitly sanctioned by the FDA. The practice is widespread, but for a reason. Joining me are Dr. Joseph Nyamtu, a cosmetic surgeon based in Norfolk, Virginia, and Patrick McMiniman, a cosmetic surgeon based in Sacramento, California. We begin with Dr. Nyamtu.
As all surgeons are well aware, many products come out with a on-label or FDA-approved use, and when they're used in a different application or in a different location, they are off-label. I think a prime example of this is when we use Botox to treat babellar wrinkles, we're using FDA-approved situation. However, when we use Botox for the frontalis muscle, that's technically off-label, as the FDA studies did not include that. So for the fillers, you know, silicone is an example of an off-label usage. There are also situations, for instance, podiatrists will use Restylane or the other hyaluronic acid fillers to cushion bunions or other podiatric problems. And this is a situation that, again, is up to the practitioner to explain to the patient the differences. And this scares some patients because they don't really understand the situation. They think maybe that's an illegal use. Evolence is only indicated for use in nasolabial folds. However, I have colleagues that inject this throughout the face and in the lips. And a lot of these products that have single-label usage, those companies are striving to develop multiple site products. For instance, Evolence developing Evolence Breeze, which is a similar porcine collagen filler that will be used in the lips. I think one of the most popular examples of off-label usage would be tear trough deformities. And this is kind of an interesting situation. For those of us that have been injecting a long time, 8 years ago, nobody ever walked into your office and said, "I'd like my tear trough filled." However, this has become a popular treatment, and so many of these things are media-fueled, and you'll turn on one of these afternoon TV shows, the Today Show or Oprah or somebody will have a segment about tear trough filling or non-surgical rhinoplasty. That's another interesting off-label usage where we're using fillers to kind of masquerade nasal deformities. So if somebody has a hump in their nose and you kind of fill in the depression in front of the hump, it mitigates or lessens the appearance of that hump. That is one example of off-label filler usage for the, quote, non-surgical rhinoplasty. But I think some people get a little carried away, kind of the old thing when you get a new hammer, the whole world's a nail. You know, you see the liquid facelift advertised where people just go hog wild with fillers and claim to be able to get facelift results just by using fillers. And it's a bit humorous because these fillers are, number one, they're temporary. Number two, they're very expensive. And I think most surgeons could do a traditional facelift a lot less expensive than you could with one of these filler facelifts. For the most ardent surgeons, fillers have become an enjoyable part of practice. And I also think it's interesting that some of my colleagues that consider themselves totally surgical practices and above and beyond using fillers have kind of changed their tune a little bit in this economy where patients have scaled back larger procedures in hopes of getting by and spending less money. And this has opened the filler market just off the charts in my practice. I'm doing more fillers and Botox now than I ever have as my surgical practice remains stable. But there's no doubt that patients are trending for less expensive procedures and maybe holdover procedures until they can see what this economy is going to do.
Dr. McMiniman, what is your take on this situation?
I mean, the FDA does need to regulate things. No mistake about that. Drug companies need to be ethical and moral in terms of what they put out there. They need to be ethical and moral in terms of their data and how they present it. So there's no question about that. But I'm not for the government regulation of medicine because I don't think it gives us a better product. Having said that, you know, I do think we need national health insurance. And I think that that's probably, not probably, it's going to have to be a government program for us to, you know, we're spending 16.3% of our gross domestic product on healthcare, and we're number 23 in the world in terms of the quality of healthcare that we deliver to our population. So that's not going to work. We need to do something better in terms of doing that. So there has to be some regulation, but in truth, doctors in industry have to be ethically ready to regulate themselves. I'm not big on having that open-ended. You know, a lot of the companies, and you and I both know this, they will put out any spin or any hype on any filler. They sell it to the public before they've really done their homework. There are huge costs in terms of development of the product. They spend more time developing and marketing than they do basic science behind it in terms of understanding. And, you know, that's not just true for cosmetic surgery. That's true for Cialis and Viagra, you know, anti-inflammatories, anti-arthritis medicine, stuff for colon cancer. So you have the companies going right to the public instead of going through physicians. And I view that as an ethical flaw on their side. And I view that the doctors that we've kind of given up control of the healthcare system specifically because we have not taken as good care of our patients as we could or should.
Tune in to all four episodes of Plastic Surgery Practice Magazine's Fillers and Injectables podcast series. I'm Jeffrey Frentzen. Thank you for listening.